It's Weekend Edition here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Jim Burris. It's easy to understand why Coke is so integral to the fabric of Atlanta. Almost since John Pemberton mixed the first batches in the mid-1880s, it's really been an institution here, but its cult status extends globally, and the Coke story is much broader than a simple, cheap soft drink. Mark Pendergrass wrote the book For God, Country, and Coca-Cola, first published in 1993. The third edition was recently released, and he joins me now from his home in Vermont via Skype. Mark, welcome.
Thanks.
Throughout the story, you keep coming back to this idea that really what we're talking here is no more than cheap sugar water. So what is it about this cheap sugar water that people forget that aspect and put it on par with God and with country?
Well, it is ironic to me. Coca-Cola is a non-essential product. We would all live if we couldn't get it. I do say it's 99% sugar water, and that's true, but it's actually a very interesting formula. John Pemberton was a morphine addict who was particularly interested in coca leaf and cocaine because he thought it was a harmless way to get off of his addiction. It was the beginning of international commerce when you had steamships and railroads. So he had ingredients from Peru, that was the coca leaf, from Ghana, that was the colilla nut, oil of cassia, which is Chinese cinnamon, comes from China. There were ingredients from all over the world, and it's quite a fascinating formula, which, by the way, I have a new version of it in this book, which I think is fabulous. It's a facsimile written in the hand of Frank Robinson, who is the sort of unsung hero of Coca-Cola, who named the drink back in 1886, and who advertised it and who manufactured it. So I managed to get this recipe from his great-granddaughter a few years ago and have put it in the book. So that's causing a bit of a furor currently.
You relay the story of a company spokesman who hands you the Coke formula and says, "Hey, now what? What are you going to do with that?"
Well, he didn't actually he pretended to hand me the formula. I did not want to hurt the company. I had gotten hold of a Coke formula. And I said, "Well, what if I put the formula in my book?" And he said, "Basically, we don't care, because if somebody made this, they couldn't call it Coca-Cola. We already have the world's best distribution system. We have spent well over 100 years building the brand equity of this product. Why would anybody go out of their way to buy a fake Coca-Cola that would inevitably cost more, that would not be easy to find because it wouldn't be well distributed, when they can get it anywhere, they could get the real thing anywhere in the world cheaper?" And he was right. So they don't really care who has their formula. The important thing about the formula is the mystique of it and the fact that it gets a lot of attention.
You say that the company has changed and it's not quite the religion maybe it used to be, at least internally. Where do you see Coca-Cola as a company going?
It's a very good question. I mean, somebody in my book said that, you know, this company is destined to outlast the United States. It's more self-correcting than the Roman Empire. That may be true, you know. I mean, certainly they're having to readjust massively in the last 10 years. They're diversifying much more than they ever have before. They spent $4.1 billion buying Glasso so they could get hold of vitamin water. They now offer 3,500 different drinks around the world, and about a quarter of them are low-calorie or no-calorie drinks. And it wouldn't surprise me in the next decade if the combined sales of Coke Zero and Diet Coke surpassed regular Coca-Cola.
Mark Pendergrass wrote the book For God, Country, and Coca-Cola. The third edition is now on bookstore shelves. Mark, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.